The title is clunky, but the wine talk is smooth. You're listening to the Matt Talks Wine and Stuff with Interesting People podcast.
Hey, everyone, and welcome to the Matt Talks Wine and Stuff with Interesting People podcast. And I have a rule, any friend of Renee, anyone who does any work with her, definitely I want to have on the podcast. Also, a great background in so many aspects of wine, Leah Spooner, who's a writer, who's a wine consultant, is joining me on the podcast. Leah, thanks so much for being part of the show.
Thank you for having me. It's a pleasure.
Yeah, so I want to start a little bit just about like slice of life of your life. Just first, as a wine consultant, things you're working on now, or just what it means to be a wine consultant.
Okay. Well, right now, or as of recently, I should say, I was a product consultant for the LCBO. I consult on, obviously, the products there and vintages. And then on my own, I'm doing writing and blogging and just sort of tasting wines, and I sort of wear many hats in the industry, and I do a bunch of different stuff for different wineries all over Canada.
So let's give an initial shameless plug. Leah, let's say I wanted to read something about Riddell Glasses or, you know, or Ontario or something like that. What website would you recommend I go to?
Okay, so my website is www.leahspooner-wine.com. On there, you'll find my latest blogs, everything going on in the wine world, especially with a focus on Canada. And it also directly links to my biggest platform, which is my Instagram page, leahspooner_wine. And then we also have the wine press with my wine partner, Renee, where we're actually scoring and reviewing Canadian wine now.
And by the way, your Instagram account, it looks great. Like you do a really, really good job of it. It's way better than mine where I take half-assed photos, which angers my girlfriend to no end. She takes she sculpts everything. And I'm like, I'm just taking the photo. I'm moving on. But before we get to a lot of now, I want to go back a little bit. Just when you were consulting at the LCBO, I'm curious more specifically what you specifically did there. Maybe it's because I have a playtime job. So when I hear consultant, I never know what that actually means. So what it actually translate at the LCBO?
Project consultants at the LCBO, they run the vintages section. Every 2 weeks they would send us to do wine tastings, and you taste all of the vintage releases, the new vintage releases coming out to the LCBO, and then you bring them in and then you sell them to customers and you talk about the vintage wines. And yeah, et cetera. So we're just like specialists inside the LCBO.
Right. Okay. So, now I got lots of side questions that I never scripted, but how many times have you ever been in the LCBO and someone tried to well actually you, or you saw someone well actually an LCBO employee? Because I've been in there and I've heard sometimes where it doesn't even bother me. Like sometimes it's a newer employee and they're being asked a tough question and I have an answer, but I always fight that urge and I never second guess. I just quietly go on my day. But how often does it happen where someone tries to swoop in?
All the time. Do you mean like other people in the store specifically or just the customers themselves trying to?
Both. I'm talking about, because it's that can be a cesspool of insecurity there.
Yeah, it's some people even like group together. Like if they hear one person asking me a question, they'll be like, oh, well, like, actually, I was in Spain and blah, blah, blah. And, you know, you should try this. This one's really good. And then they're just having a conversation and then more people join in. And then, you know, I just smile and nod at that point.
Sometimes it must be nice and communal. Other times it's like you feel like you're working at Canadian Tire.
Yeah.
Oh, my God, there's a free employee and everyone swarms you.
Yeah. Yes. there's some people, like a lot of customers who purchase out of vintages only will talk to product consultants. They won't even speak to anybody else who's just a regular employee of the LCBO. So, yeah.
That's not cool. I mean, I mean,
really,
you know, no, there's so many that are really good there and they know their stuff. And there's others, you're early, you're learning, you know, that kind of thing takes time. Yeah. Did you ever wine that you were going to be tasting and you were really excited and it just fell flat, maybe a bad bottle, bad vintage? Did you ever have one where you were excited, like, oh, I can't wait to drink this, and it just didn't, you know, hit?
Yeah, of course. A lot, actually. I find when I, especially when I go to the tastings with the LCBO, I mean, a lot of the really big producers or wines that tend to be like on the higher end price point wise, just like really fall flat. And a lot of those wines are just focused towards marketing, and they're really just a name. So you're expecting this great wine that everyone talks about. And so many of your customers come in and they're like, oh, I only want to drink this. And it's really not that great of a wine. I mean, there's so many other really good wines that are way better for less than half of the price.
You're talking Napa Cab. We all, you know,
yeah.
Or certain Super Tuscans. Let's be honest. We know, you know, it's, you know, you're talking to code, but, okay. And I'm going to stay on this a little bit longer, but I want to get to a lot of your writing and Canadian wine and stuff, but, do you have a favorite story of just helping a customer, helping someone that was lost, and you were able to guide them in the right direction, and now they only buy Alsatian Riesling, and you're huzzah? Like, do you have any of those moments?
Yeah, I actually have a lot. I mean, I think I'm a pretty good marketer, like, especially for Canadian wines. And a lot of the times in the stores, like, my favorite is when I can take someone who's buying, you know, just like a $9, like, mass produced horrible wine, and get them to try something that's just like small lot from Ontario, that's just got really nice quality, and then just converting them to that. And yeah, I mean, that's the best when I have those customers, and it actually happens quite often.
So then we'll go to that to Canadian wine. I find one that's fun to do is, the hardest is always, it's usually guys who only drink big red, and then they don't want to drink Canadian red. And, you know, I can find sometimes, I mean, if I get a Two Sisters Merlot, that'll turn them, an Okanagan Syrah, or even some single vintage, like a Batchelder, or, you know, one place I want to talk about, Rose Hall, or Kloss and Chase, some of their single vineyard Pinots. Like, those ones have more than enough body to sway.
Yeah. The problem with that, I find with a lot of the people who, like, sort of like pinhole themselves in, you know, like one specific type of wine, is really like a lot of them don't just have the palate to appreciate any quality style of wine, whether it be a big red or a light bodied red or any kind of white wine. And they just, it's more like a mental thing than it is, you know, you're sort of like changing their mind and not their palate. Yeah. But I mean, yeah, of course we have really great full bodied reds here from Ontario. And I think a lot of people just either have bad memories from tasting, you know, like a box of red Canadian wine, sorry, air quotes, Canadian wine 20 years ago. And they just think that we can't produce great wine like that here. And we can, of course.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. Yeah. You try a Magnata Merlot once and now you're suddenly going off. And part of it is maybe this, like, I would call it a Linus disease, where you need that blank safety blanket. And sometimes it can be hard. Like, someone knows what they like, it's familiar, so they can wrap themselves in that wine while the rest of the world seems a little, ooh, God, that's scary. I don't know what that's about.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. And I mean, like, I've been tasting amazing Canadian wine as long as I've been in the industry, which is 16 years now. And trying to, like, just bring that message to a wider audience, which is really what I'm trying to do with my Instagram. It's everything to share that passion and then have more people sort of latch onto that passion and enjoy those wines as well. It's amazing.
How did you get your start? And was there a moment when you realized you wanted to be in wine?
Yeah. So when I was in college, I ended up needing a job, and my landlord got me a job at the wine rack. And that was definitely one of the best jobs that I've ever had. And at that time they were giving out employees, they were giving like a bottle a week, I think it was, yeah, every week to employees. And then they give you this tasting chart. And so you're breaking down the wine every single week. And I just found that so fun and interesting. And I really developed my palate doing that. And then in my store specifically, we were opening bottles every day to taste with customers. And then it just, I just had the bug ever since.
Yeah.
Like, I just love that. So.
Yeah. Yeah, no, that's how it starts. And then it's the geography, the history, the people, the climate, the science all goes into one. Scale of 1 to 10. How nervous do you get doing blind tasting?
1. I love blind tasting. I am the most competitive person, especially with myself. So I love blind tasting and I would do it any day with anybody.
All right. So then this leads to what is your, what do you have a best moment and a most embarrassing call from wine blind tasting?
embarrassing. My best moment is I damed the Kim Crawford Sauvignon Blanc, which was for what some people know in the wine world, Fred Dame, a famous sommelier and wine educator. If you dame a wine, then you can say the year, the vintage, the varietal, and the country of the wine you're drinking just by sniffing it. And I did that with this particular wine. So that was amazing to me.
Hell yeah.
An embarrassing moment. I don't think I've had any real I don't get embarrassed very easily. I mean, I've definitely just been totally wrong doing blind tastings. And in those cases, I'm just second guessing myself and like all over the map. But no big embarrassing.
Okay. Nice. So I wanted to go over some of the topics you've been writing about, just so you can give the listeners a bit of perspective. One of them is someone who's, if anyone's listened to all the episodes, and by the way, anyone's listened to every episode I've done, thank you. That's remarkable. Not needed, but you know, appreciated. Rose Hall Run. I've had Dan Sullivan on. I think it's one of my favorite Prince Edward County producers. But your thoughts, your Cole's notes on Rose Hall Run.
They are just, you know, pioneers of the Prince Edward County wine region. They're a fantastic winery. Not only do they have quality wines across their portfolio, but the people there are so kind and passionate. And that's what really draws me to them as well. I remember the very first time I tasted one of their wines and I was blown away. And of course, not only that, they're from Canada, but Prince Edward County. And I just think they've just really made waves for Ontario wine in general, and especially Prince Edward County. And there's just so many, I know it's growing, but it's still just such this hidden gem of a wine region that's just packed with amazing wine. And that's just what I love about Rose Hall Run. They're just, you know, they really show the terroir in their wines. I actually blinded a Rose Hall Run Pinot Noir that was aged 10 years before. And I knew the winery right away. They just have their own style. And it's just this really charming quality in wines.
I love the 2013 JCR, that Chardonnay pretty special wine.
Yeah. 2013, that was a really great vintage too for Prince Edward County and Ontario in general.
Scale of 1 to 10, how evil am I that part of me doesn't want anyone to know about Prince Edward County because more wine will be available. More wine will be available to me and it'll be easier to travel. Yes, that is going to hurt them economically. It might make it difficult for them to pay their rent and mortgage. But on the other side, it makes life slightly easier for me.
Yeah, no, I wouldn't say, well, maybe a little bit evil, but if you are, then I'm on the same level as you. Because I do feel that way. You know, I live in the country, so I'm like a country girl, and I'm actually closer to Prince Edward County than any other wine region. So I really like the quaintness of Prince Edward County and sort of going there and having it be really quiet and not, you know, just flooded with people. And
yeah, I would recommend everyone.
Not too evil.
Yeah. Okay. Not too evil, but that's only not too evil because you have some of it in you. So we, you know, so I like that. I like that. My recommendation. Yeah.
I definitely agree.
Yeah. But my recommendation, anyone listening,
pardon?
I was going to say to anyone listening, go on a Tuesday through Thursday. You can, you know, not in the middle of winter, but they'll be open. You can chat with them more because there's nothing worse than you go on a Saturday and the person in front of you is asking seven questions about the oak treatment when there's 12 people behind you. You know, you got to pick your moments.
Yeah. Yeah. And since actually COVID, like when they were open and people were allowed to go in, but there's still the social distancing. I mean, I went a few of the weekends last summer and they were packed. Like every winery just packed lineups to the road, you know?
Yeah. Cause no one could travel. So that became their, their vacation. Yeah. Can you give some Greek wine that people should try, either producers or just grapes for people out there that want to experience Greece? Is there a recommendation or two?
Yeah. So I have a couple. So the Peplo that I just put up on my Instagram, it's actually a Greek rosé. I think like I could probably count on one hand how many Greek rosés I had up until that point, because we just weren't getting a ton in Ontario. So it's grown, it was grown in high elevation vineyards and just beautiful. The rosé was like the acidity is amazing in it. And so is the minerality, which a lot of people don't really know about Greek wines, is that the minerality in the wine is fantastic and it matches the acidity beautifully. So yeah, when you get a good producer from Greece, the wines are magnificent.
I always found Xenomarva, and I'm sure I'm mispronouncing it, I remember trying some that just had a real Nebbiola quality to it. I was always shocked by a couple. And again, this is only a couple of examples, but I always enjoyed that.
Mm-hmm. I really like Xenomarva. I've had some really good ones and I've had some really bad ones, less bad ones, of course. But yeah, when you have the right winemaker doing a Xenomarva, they can be really interesting. They're really complex, but at the same time, they can be easy drinking. But yeah, Xenomarva actually translates to black acid. So the wines actually have a lot of black fruit in them and then are very high in acid.
Good choice on Xenomarva than selling that in Canada is come grab a bottle of black acid. I don't know. I think that might hurt them a little bit. True or false? How much better does a glass of wine taste when it is poured in the proper glass?
Oh, true. For sure. Yes, it tastes better. But when you're a professional taster and you need to break down all the elements in the wine, a glass is extremely important. I mean, if you're just drinking for pleasure, then no, it doesn't really matter. You know, if you're not breaking down what's in the glass and you're just trying to enjoy a glass of wine, I mean, you don't have to be a wine snob about that. but yeah, for someone like for industry people or even people that just like to really think about what they're drinking and enjoy glass that way, then yes, glassware is really important. And I just did an article on the wine rings from Riedel, and I am obsessed with these wine glasses. I talk to anyone who will listen about them.
And what is it specifically about the shape, the curvature, the flatness sometimes of the bottom of the glasses? What is it that specifically does that can aid if someone just wants to really nose around what they're drinking?
Right. So these wine rings are varietal specific. So depending on what varietal you're drinking, the shape of your glass should be different. Pinot Noir glass, for example, would have a really big base. So that flattens out the wine a lot and gives it a larger surface area for you to nose the wine. Pinot Noir is an incredibly aromatic wine. So you want to get all those aromas that you can. And then also the top of the glass tapers just slightly, which also keeps the aromas in the glass and not just letting them out. So when you're really smelling the aromas, they're presented to the nose.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And follow up, how many glasses have you broken just because you were cleaning them and something went wrong?
Not that many. I'm pretty careful. Although my husband is not allowed to touch my wine glasses. He's the one who breaks everything, and I literally will not let him come within. I tell him he has to social distance from my expensive wine glasses.
Okay, so then how often has it been? Did he put him in the dishwasher? Overly aggressive drying? What is the weapon of choice for breaking those glasses?
It's just clumsiness. I mean, he can just be anywhere around it, and he'll just, you know, like walk by it and knock it over. I mean, he doesn't even have to be washing it.
Okay, are you like me? Where the two-part question. Okay, first part, where you will see a glass of wine and you realize that's in a high traffic flow area, or it's too close to the edge, and you'll move it yourself. My head is on a swivel on that all the time.
Yes. And I have 4 children, so I am very careful, and I am always doing that.
Oh my God. Yeah. 4 kids and you haven't broken more glasses. Good. Yeah. That is a maternal. I know you have a maternal instinct, not just for your children, but for your glasses.
Yes.
Sometimes we can argue later which is more valuable. And then the other one, I am very good at. I can be a room with 7 people, and some people put their glass down and I'm like, oh, which glass is mine? I'm like, that's yours. That's yours. You're on the unoaked Riesling. You're there. You're there. You're there. Like, I always know what everyone's drinking all the time.
Yes. Yes. For sure. For sure I am. I miss those moments, you know. I'm not around enough people drinking wine anymore. But yeah, I definitely am. I definitely like to, usually if I'm in a room or I'm like hosting a wine party or something, I'm in control.
Mm-hmm. By the way, needs to be said, 4 children and you're up on all the wine writing and the Instagram and the consulting. Mm-hmm. I take it sleep is often a luxury.
I barely sleep. Sleep maybe... I'm lucky if I get 6 hours a night.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's a high water.
Yeah. I'm a workaholic. So when I'm not attending to the children, like I am studying or writing or working. I love it.
What does you doing nothing look like, if it ever happens at all?
I actually don't know, because I don't ever do nothing. I never do nothing. And actually the odd time that if I am, say, sitting on my couch, which never happens, my children can't find me because they won't look on the couch for me. I am never doing nothing. And I don't remember the last time I did nothing. Maybe when I was a teenager.
So when someone says to you, Leah, have you seen the latest episode of this show? You're like, no, I've never seen that show. I literally don't have time for that.
No, I don't really watch TV.
So I can't ask you for a critique of the final episode of Game of Thrones.
I did do Game of Thrones. Yeah.
Okay. So that was your one guilty point, but you were watching it while working, while writing or something.
Yeah, of course. Always. Yeah, I'm always doing that. And my brother-in-law actually worked on some of the graphics for Game of Thrones. So
really?
Yeah. That's why I was, yeah.
Nice. Well, tell him I enjoyed the last season. I'm tired of all the Game of Thrones elitists, you know, just,
yeah,
it was fun. Fun. There's dragons and battles and stuff. There's a time and a place for that. Not every episode has to be half the cast dies at a wedding.
Exactly.
I noticed you had your South African wine certificate. And for people, the one thing I always say is, this goes back to an earlier conversation, if someone's looking to branch out and they like big and they usually stick to California or maybe even Washington or South America or Barossa, that South America is a great place for people like the larger reds, the Bordeaux styles, that South Africa is a place they should probably check out.
Oh, for sure. There's so many amazing wines coming out of South Africa. And they do so many varietals too. You know, like we really only stick to Chenin Blanc and Pinotage, which are fantastic, which do they do. But I mean, like Cabernet Sauvignon, and actually Cabernet Sauvignon is one of their most planted grapes, and they do really nice Syrah, Pinot Noir now as well. And even their red blends, like some of the red blends that we're getting through vintages are amazing and incredibly priced too. You can't beat the price.
It's always great. Just leave the famous area, find the great wine, and you'll certainly save some cash. So for you, what does a proper Canadian wine revolution, what does that look like now, and what does that look like a couple of years from now?
I want Canada to first, like, our the market that we don't export, so our import market, I mean, there's not a lot of Canadians drinking Canadian wine, and I really don't get that. I don't know if it's, I mean, I've been asked this question 100 times. I don't really know if it's the market not being as aware of how great Canadian wines are, or if they're just so stuck on the popularity of other countries. But I mean, our young market, like 19 to 24, there's a lot of wine drinkers. So I would love for our younger generation to, you know, come into the wine world, tasting and appreciating Canadian wine before any other. A lot of countries, you know, barely export any of their wines because it's all drunk within their country. And where Canada is different, we're exporting most of our wine.
It makes a lot of sense to go after for the young audience. And part of it is, there is the stereotype of the old one. I think also for Ontario, there's an elitism. I see it in sports where no one wants to watch the CFL. They just watch the NFL. It's just like, there's an elitism there. Yeah. And I think it's the same thing. Like, the only way you're going to get older people, and I get it, they're stuck in their ways. And we all are, to an extent. We all have the things we love. But you got to put 4 glasses of Burgundy, but one of them is a Rosehall Run Pinot. And,
and
sneak it in and have others like well-made Village, maybe even throw a Premier Cru in. And sometimes that Ontario is going to win. And I think that's the only way you can do it with people older of a certain age.
Yeah, I would have to agree. You know, I think the older age group, like, that is so stuck in their ways, they're not as open-minded as their younger drinkers are. But yeah, that must be the only way to convert them.
Well, I'm a member of a place called the National Club, and years and years and years ago, the wine director, a guy named Brian Perry, said that most of the people here only drink wine where World War was fought on it. So if a World War did not occur on the land, they're probably not drinking it. So I got to drink all the New Zealand wine. It was like, hey, you know, I win.
But
I think with the younger audience, one way, and you tell me, because you're in marketing far more than I am. I'm just an interloper. That for the younger generation, drink local, support local, also environmentally, you know, the wine is not traveling as far. So, you know, less fossil fuels. I wonder if that's a way just to hook on a generation that is certainly more mindful of that than maybe people born before 1970.
It for sure is. The younger generation is all about sustainability, and also supporting local. I mean, they're just more mindful, I think, of the impact they have on their purchasing.
And they have more information about it. You know, like I was born in 1975. When I was 19 in 1994, there was no talk that, well, if you buy this from the local farmer, and not only to help the local economy, but the food you buy from far away, there's jet fuel that goes there. There's this and this and this ramification about not buying local. It was part of it was just that information wasn't being exposed to everyone.
Right. Yeah. I mean, I think that since that's not really being taught, I mean, like, social media and what wine ambassadors in Canada should be doing is promoting our own wine more. We just need to be talking about it more. That's what I'm trying to do.
Yeah. So what is, in your mind, the impact of two questions, the impact of wine influencers and just the impact of social media on the wine world today?
There's been a lot of talk about this, especially recently. And I'm not sure that I really agree with what a lot of our Canadian wine critics are saying. We don't really have that many Canadian wine critics. And just in the past couple weeks or few weeks, I've heard 3 of our top Canadian wine critics in separate occasions just really cast shade on influencers in general, or like even like personally seeking them out and like writing on their posts. posts about Canadian wine just because they don't like what they're doing or like what they're saying. And I mean, I think that anyone who is online promoting Canadian wine, whether they have a good palate or don't have a good palate, I think that it's great for the Canadian wine industry. And I don't think that anybody should be put down for their level of wine knowledge or passion.
Follow up to that. And like, I knew something was going on, but I hadn't been following it. Is there a general consensus about the negativity towards the wine influencer? Is there some consensus like they don't like wine influencers because of X, Y, Z? So yeah, I'll start there. Is there anything specific that has been a common theme?
Yeah. So I think that there's definitely, so like I said before, like our number one Canadian wine critics, I think they're all of a certain age, actually, even. I think they don't like that there's these new younger people coming up into the media world and, you know, are getting attention from wineries or getting like free product, and they just feel sort of discredited. And so their general consensus to influencers is that, you know, like they don't know anything or they shouldn't be portraying this image to consumers that in their eyes is false or right. Just not good enough.
Mm-hmm. So what is the most positive and what's the most negative effect of social media on the wine world? What's the best thing that social media does for wine and what's the worst?
Positive for sure, which is happening now, especially since COVID. It's really broadening the audience to younger generations and older generations. Like we're just, the audience is really opening up. I mean, like me personally, even like I don't read newspapers, and I even put this thing up on my Instagram before about, you know, like who, if I wrote a blog, who would read that? Because I don't go and read people's wine blogs really like that often, or it's a very select few that I do read their actual material. So I just think that you're reaching a whole other demographic, which is great for the Canadian wine industry, because that's what we need, just more publicity in general. So that's a huge positive, and it's getting people more excited about wine. I'm not sure if there's anything detrimental about it. I mean, it's angering a few people, but I haven't seen anything that is hurting our industry on social media.
I think the person with the bottle of DRC and they make it seem really casual. I see that one. I'm like, all right, I get it. It's Tuesday. You know, you're having this. Is there any way to bridge the gap? Like I see it in the sports media industry where there's the young generation where they were focusing a lot on analytics and using blogs and the internet to analyze hockey. And it certainly chuffed some of the older guard, the more newspaper, just the more traditional forms of media. And they're a little better now at trying to like see eye to eye to see where there can be missteps, but where they actually have a lot of commonalities. Is there any way for this right. as well? Because it seems like trying to splinter it it's not the best for the Canadian wine industry.
Yeah.
I mean, maybe not. Maybe it's guys and dolls. Maybe it's, you know, it's like a musical. You got the, you know, you got the two sides and they're rhythmically snapping their fingers and on their each side. But I don't know if there's a way for at least to be more commonality there.
Yeah, I think the wine industry in general always has that sort of, there's always that imbalance. I mean, there's always those people that, you know, only drink this sort of wine or won't drink Canadian wine. And then you have people who are more open-minded. And I think you're always going to have that difference in consumers. Mm-hmm. I hope that, I feel like the wine community, and especially online, is just very accepting, and I think that people who are really passionate about wine, such as myself, I get really excited talking to anybody who is passionate about wine, you know, whether it is a DRC or whether it's, you know, like a $10 bottle, whatever, we're just excited to talk about it. Yeah. So I think we can find common ground there, and I think as time goes on, it'll just become more bridged.
Yeah, I mean, your passion, I mean, anyone who goes to your Instagram account, it comes out. There's no false notes about it. Actually, speaking of false notes, how My own rule when it comes to assessing wine and talking about wine, or if I've been given any free product, glad to, you know, to taste it and review it. And maybe this is, you know, maybe too goody two shoes of me. If I don't like a wine, I don't review it, you know, because sometimes, especially if someone is new to wine, they see my review. I don't want to pushing them away just because I didn't like it, because no one has the same palate. Now, unless it's some real chemical, just mass produced 17, you know, grams of sugar per liter, when I'm like, I'm always uncomfortable. I'm always uncomfortable because I know that a lot of hands go into making that wine. And so what I just do is, if I don't like it, I'm not going to review it. If you see anything that I'm reviewing, those are ones that I enjoy. Just how you deal with that.
Basically the same way. If I don't like a wine, I am not going to review it. There are wines on my page that I taste and I think, like, this is okay. But I mean, I've been tasting wine forever, so I feel like my palate is more advanced than the average person anyway. So if I think it's something that the average person is going to enjoy, then I'll post about it. But I don't post, you know, like mass produced wines, and I try to stick to small lot or vintages. If I'm ever asking or buying wines, I'm pretty good and pretty knowledgeable at knowing what's going to be good and what isn't already.
What are you drinking now?
I am drinking a Red Tail Vineyards Chardonnay. So they're from PEC. They're sourcing their grapes from Niagara right now, but they are planting. They do have vineyards growing. Lee Baker is the winemaker there. Incredible winery. They've got to be the best winery in Ontario that nobody really knows about yet.
Yeah. What would be...
I'm drinking their Chardonnay.
Their Chardonnay. Yeah.
They're a good one.
What, because we're going to wrap this up, and I appreciate you doing it. I feel like I've almost made this a job interview, but just basically my rule for this one is like, okay, Leah's really smart. Get her on and make people that listen a tiny bit smarter as well. If you were going to recommend a couple Ontario wineries, like a couple ones that you like, how about, okay, let's do it this way. We're going to go rapid fire. I'm putting you on the spot here. This is totally not fair, but before I do it, another plug. If I want to go to your website, where would I go to it?
So you would go to Leah Spooner. Oh, sorry. My website is www.leahspooner-wine.com. And my Instagram is leahspooner_wine. And I also do the wine press. So that's the_winepress.
All right. Now they've given you another shameless plug. Now you're forced to do this. And I say on the front end, whatever one you pick doesn't necessarily is your favorite, and you're not bad mouthing anyone else. But if I said, we'll start with Ontario Chardonnay, which is one producer you would say for people to try?
I would say Red Tail. They have incredible Chardonnay. Just amazing. Amazing winemaking.
Pinot Noir.
Westcott Vineyards.
Cab Franc.
Ooh. I really like Brian Schmidt from Vinland Estates. And I had a 10-year-old Cab Franc not too long ago of theirs, and it was beautiful.
And Gamay?
Ooh, Batchelder.
Oh, it's so good. I just went and bought like a 12-pack of a bunch of his different Gamays about like 3 weeks ago.
Oh, amazing. Yeah, I'm just going through the new release of Gamays right now.
Yeah. And
article coming.
Oh, nice. Article. I love it. And finally, because I'm contractually obligated to talk about Riesling when I talk to anyone within wine. It's just the rules. I don't make them up. Your Riesling of choice.
Oh, that's a tough one. I really, really like, again, Vinland Estates Elevation Riesling.
Yes.
And I really like Not Just Vineyard from Flat Rock.
Yeah. No, the Flat Rock is an excellent, excellent one. I really appreciate you doing the pod. I'd love to have you on sometime, you know, just sort of get caught up of the state of wine in Canada and just what's going on, because obviously this is, you know, your everyday life. And I appreciate, I didn't know you had four kids. I would have asked you four, I would have asked you four questions and said, all right, you get out of here. You got things to do.
No, no, I love it. Thank you for having me on. I would love to do it again. I feel like we just scratched the surface of everything here.
Oh yeah. No, no. Love to get you back on, but I'm literally like, I had some other questions. I'm like, okay, no, now I feel guilty. We can, some stuff I can pick up in a podcast down the road. So Leah, appreciate you doing the show. All the best with the website, with the Instagram, with the consulting, with WordPress, with all that sort of stuff. And you and Renee fighting it out for who works the most. I'm sure it's a close competition between the two of you. Thanks everyone for listening to the Matt Talks Wine and Stuff with Interesting People podcast. Remember, you can find me on Stitcher, Spotify, iTunes, and wherever quality podcasts are sold.
Thanks for listening to the Matt Talks Wine and Stuff with Interesting People podcast. Happy hunting.